Welcome to episode 24 of the Hamilton Spectator's Newsroom Insider. I'm David Crosby. I'm joined today by John Wells to discuss a follow-up to his recent profile of a 100-year-old cold case. On August 19, 1917, Dr. Douglas McGrobbie was found bludgeoned to death in a pool of blood in a downtown building. The case has remained unsolved this past century, but a reader of John's story has a personal connection to the case and got in touch with him to help flesh out the details. Next, I talked to Natalie Patton about the City Council's ongoing relationship with the Hamilton Waterfront Trust, the organization tasked with managing the city's downtown harborfront amenities, its mandate being to help Hamiltonians connect with their waterfront. The trust, which recently had its charity status annulled by the CRA, owes the city $325,000 in back taxes. All right, so John, we're coming up on the 100-year anniversary. It'll be August 19th of when Dr. McGrobbie was murdered.
Yes, Saturday.
Yeah. And you originally had a piece about this a couple weeks ago in the spec, sort of going through the full history of it. Would you mind giving us a brief recap about that?
Yes, so that story, which I kind of hoped it would run, the big story would run on the anniversary, but we had Dieppe coverage and other things that were worthy of running instead, certainly. So, but the full story was the unsolved murder. I think it's fair to call it a murder. I mean, he was bludgeoned to death. That's what the doctors decided back in 1917. Dr. Douglas McGrobbie found in a pool of his own blood in a building on Cannon Street at Bay, upstairs in the Crescent Oil building. Crescent Oil, a company that still exists, and the building is still there as well. And, you know, blood spatter on the wall and so on. And four men were charged with manslaughter who had been with him that evening. And it went through the sort of an old-fashioned and kind of convoluted grand jury-type process. And in the end, the judge took the case away from the jury, and nothing more became of it. The men were all released, and Dr. McGrobbie was buried in Hamilton Cemetery, and that was the end of it. And it wasn't even considered a homicide in the library and so on. It's not listed among the homicides, unsolved or otherwise, because it was known at the time as the McGrobbie tragedy. He was killed, received blunt force trauma to the head, but in the end, it was thrown to court, and that was the end of it. So, a reader of ours, Aaron Blake, who works at Crescent Oil today, got in touch with me and wanted a story. He'd researched the case and read all the stories, so then I did so as well. And he even went and found the stone in the cemetery belonging to Dr. McGrobbie, but it had been grown over by grass all these years later. Right. It wasn't even visible. He got staff to unearth it and clean it off. And so sort of uncovered a long, cold case and uncovered the stone, quite literally. So that's the story that I wrote about a couple of weeks ago.
Right. And you, as I understand it, have something of an update on that.
Yeah, you know, it's always interesting to me, fascinating to me, how some of the stories that we write, the ripple effect. People out there who are reading it far and wide, and oftentimes I'll write a story and I might get calls from people where you get some more information, new information that you would have liked to have used in the first story.
Right.
And sometimes there's not really an opportunity for follow-up, and I think, oh, I wish you'd call me before, but of course, people don't know the story's coming out
of course.
Until it shows up. So, but in this case, a day or two after my feature ran, I received calls from a few people, and the most interesting of which was from Dr. McGrobbie's granddaughter, Willa Fitzpatrick. Who grew up in Burlington, which is where McGrobbie's father had lived. And so she grew up in Burlington, but she's lived in the U.S. for many years, in the last 13 years in Florida. So she was calling me from Florida to say that she had read the story. Her husband always checks the spec.com for local news and checks the obituaries. And came across the McGrobbie story, which certainly caught her attention because that was her grandfather, and she'd always wondered, growing up, what happened to her grandfather. The family, related that he'd been killed, murdered, but there was never any sort of any discussion about any of the details of the case. I mean, no one kept a scrapbook of the articles or anything. At least, Willa never saw anything like that. And so she was quite, it was a weird mix of emotions for her, obviously, on the phone. I mean, she was delighted to see the story, as she said, you know, to learn more about her grandfather, what had happened to him from the news coverage back at the time that she had never read. So she was quite happy to see that. And of course, sad to be reminded of how his life ended and all that sort of thing. So, but she was, she thanked me for the story. She thanked Aaron Blake for having done all this research and finding the stone, and gave me a couple of new bits of information that I could use for my follow-up story.
What are those?
There's the tease. Yeah. So the what I found interesting, you know, she said that her mother, that is Dr. McRobbie's, one of Dr. McRobbie's two daughters, whose name was Jean, that her mother would rarely talk about it, you know, the case or anything like that. It was always very hush-hush, and she said, you know, when you're kids, you don't ask questions. She wished she had. But that the one thing her mother did tell her was that she believed or had been told or, you know, that Dr. McRobbie had been murdered because he refused to perform an abortion.
Wow.
Back at the time. And so that struck me as interesting and odd. And she said, you know, and I told her, I said, you know, there was certainly no mention of that in any of the coverage back at the time or the trials and that sort of thing. And she said that, well, that's true. She said, you know, my mother may have just been telling a story. She said, but of all the things to tell us, why that?
Especially as children, you know.
As children, yeah, exactly. That's, you know, it's pretty dark and, you know, something that she would never talk about, but she did tell them that.
Right.
So she found that to be interesting. And so, you know, who knows? There's so much mystery surrounding the case. You know, McRobbie's father was a minister and, by all accounts at the time, certainly, obviously, you know, very upset about the murder, and that another family member, distant family member, had told me that the story had been that he had been trying to, McRobbie had been trying to help somebody.
Okay.
I didn't include this in the print story. I just sort of didn't really have space for it, but, you know, there was this notion, this vibe within the family through the generations that he'd been trying to help somebody, and that's how it led to his death. But this could have been his father, the minister, trying to spin a more positive story,
right?
Because there was a lot of drinking that was going on. It was a big, you know, drunk fest, and so perhaps he was trying to put a better spin on it. But, you know, so part of the vibe, he's trying to help someone. Part of the story was he was, you know, he'd been asked to perform an abortion.
Yeah,
you,
yeah.
You know, who knows? But it certainly added some intrigue to the mix.
Absolutely.
For this follow-up story that I went with. I suppose the other interesting aspect, well, two others for me. One that Willa had never seen a picture of her grandfather.
Wow.
She'd never seen it before. She wondered if pictures had been destroyed by some flooding, you know, decades ago, right, or what have you. But she'd never seen what he looked like. So the picture that we ran in the paper, you know, a PDF of a 1917 Spectator front page, was the first time she ever laid eyes on him.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So
I was going to ask you, you know, if there was any information that she had gleaned from the article that she hadn't previously been aware of, but that's pretty.
Oh, the picture for sure. Yeah, yeah, and certainly, you know, all the details of, you know, what had happened or might have happened. But yeah, no, the picture. I thought that was quite interesting, she, you know, she's sort of thanking me for that. Again, it's a weird sort of thing. I mean, the only reason he's in the paper is because of how he died, you know.
Yeah.
But she was at least happy to see his picture, and then. And she gave me. I received a call from another reader who lives in Grimsby, who used to work at what was called West Lincoln Hospital. Is it still called West Lincoln Hospital?
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either. But she told me that on the wall at West Lincoln Hospital is a picture of this woman, whose name is H. Douglas McRobbie, and that was Dr. McRobbie's his other daughter,
right,
who never married, never had children, and who went by her middle name, Doug, all of her life, which I've gathered from Googling, you know, in the 17th and 18th century, Douglas was a Scottish name sometimes given to girls.
Right.
And so she, but obviously she used his name as a tribute to him, and she was the superintendent of nurses at that hospital. So she followed in her father's footsteps a little bit. And so I bounced that information off of Willa, and she confirmed all that was true, that she knew D, as they called Helen Douglas, is for a nickname.
Yeah.
And so
And yeah, is Dee still with us?
Yeah, no. They've all died.
Okay.
And McRobbie's widow, lived into her 90s. So she lived a long life, not long after he was killed. And one other aspect that I mentioned, the follow-up story, is about the haunting, which I thought about leading with, because people, I received a few emails from people about the aspect that the Crescent Oil building is haunted by Dr. McRobbie's ghost. Mm-hmm. People, I've talked to people who work there who swear that there's something there, kind of thing. And so a lot of people who are quite into this this aspect. And Aaron Blake is holding, has invited a medium, a psychic medium, to come to the building on Saturday on the anniversary, the 100th anniversary mm-hmm. of his death, to come and do a, there's an actual phrase for it, a supernatural investigation, as it's called, of the thing. And Willa Fitzpatrick has told me that her niece, who lives in the Barrie area, is going to try to attend that. So the great granddaughter of McRobbie is going to, as I wrote in the story, visit for the first time the room where her great-great-grandfather was killed.
I wonder if that might help induce some kind of manifestation of his presence.
You never know. That's the thing. As I say, people, that's not my thing, really. And it's not even Aaron Blake's. I mean, he's a skeptic in terms of that. But when I talk to a couple of people that work in the building, and they swear that there's a presence there. So I found that quite interesting.
Yourself, will you be attending?
I was invited, but I have other plans, so I won't be going. But Aaron is going to give me an update on what they, what the medium detects. So I'll be curious to hear what they come up with. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I look forward to hearing about that.
Perfect.
Thanks very much, Sean.
Thanks, Dave.
So, Natalie, thank you for joining me. You were down at City Hall today for a council meeting covering how the city is going to be approaching the Waterfront Trust. Is that correct?
Yeah, so on the council agenda today was a motion from the Hamilton Waterfront Trust letting city know that they want to restructure their board. So right now there are 5 seats, 4 of them are city appointed and 1 is appointed by the Hamilton Port Authority, and they want to have all 5 seats appointed by the city. Also part of that motion was letting the city know that they have agreed to manage the redevelopment of Piers 5 through 7, and also letting the city know that they restructured into 2 organizations in November of 2016.
Okay, and so this has all come to a head because of questions about how the Waterfront Trust had been managing the property. Is that correct?
So after this motion came up on the agenda at today's council meeting, Councillor Donna Skelly put forward her own motion asking for the Waterfront Trust to come and speak to city councilors about their finances at an upcoming general issues committee meeting.
Okay.
So that meeting has not been set yet. It's not clear totally when that will happen. There was talk of September. She would like to see the trust's audited financial statements from 2012 through 2016. And she said she would also like to ask them questions about their charity status, which was annulled, as well as about the $325,000 it owes the city in back taxes.
So it's essentially trying to give the Waterfront Trust a chance to tell its version of the story.
Yeah, I mean, Skelly, in speaking to her after the meeting, she called those issues that she wants to address red flags. But some other counselors said exactly what you just said, that, you know, they want to give the Waterfront Trust a chance to tell its side of the story. So, for instance, Councillor Terry Whitehead, when I spoke to him after the meeting, he referenced what he called the narrative that had been presented, and he said, you know, he thinks it's important for the community to hear in a public space how the Waterfront Trust is answering these questions. He said, you know, the media has done its job, and now it's council's turn to do its job.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And you say some councillors. What was the opposition to that?
Councillors Jason Farr and Tom Jackson, who both sit on the Waterfront Trust board, did not support Councillor Skelly's motion, and Councillor Farr made mention to the fact that the media is only reporting on these issues at the Trust because it's a slow news summer. Yeah, so, and other councillors, in speaking with Councillor Matthew Green after, he said, you know, he'd like to see the facts. He really stressed the facts. He said he wants, if we're going to discuss the option of, say, bringing the Trust in-house into the city, which was thrown around a little bit today because it is an arm's length agency, he said he wants to see the facts. He wants to see everything laid out in a report to see what that would mean. And he mentioned that, you know, he has no qualms about asking boards and agencies the tough questions. He said that's the city council's job, and that, you know, there are no sacred cows, is right. How he put it.
So Councillor Skelly's motion passed?
Yes.
All right. So it sounds like they'll be discussing this at an upcoming General Issues Committee.
That's right.
Okay. Thanks very much, Natalie.
Thanks for having me.